are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. It is a Tuesday mailbag episode here on the show, and I'm just going to turn it over to you guys. I got all kinds of tweets and all kinds of emails to get to, so we'll see how many of these we can knock out. Save a couple for Winky Wednesday as well. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review the show. You can find this podcast and many others on the new podcast app, Himalaya, as well as Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, and Spotify. And when you're in your car, just tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On 49ers. You know, something I want to bring up here before I get into the mailbag stuff, and it's something I want to bring it up today because I know I'm going to forget when it's actually the 40th anniversary, which would be May 2nd, 2nd to the 4th. That's when the 1979 NFL draft happened, May 2nd to the 4th. So we're coming up on the 40th anniversary of the 1979 NFL draft. So why is that important? Well, the 49ers earned the first pick in the draft that year. But that pick belonged to Buffalo because the 49ers traded for O.J. Simpson from the Buffalo Bills. More significant things also happened in the 1979 draft. But the 49ers traded the first pick, what ended up being the first pick in the NFL draft, to Buffalo for O.J. Simpson. Not a great trade. The Bills drafted Ohio State linebacker Tom Cousineau. Not a great draft pick. So, didn't, you know, if they were going to take him, who ended up playing a couple seasons in San Francisco, actually, in the mid-80s, much later, after he played in the CFL. Not a great pro football career for Tom Cousineau. But the really important thing that happened that year, the 49ers selected Notre Dame quarterback Joe Montana in the third round, number 82 overall, which was the last pick in the third round in 1979 because the Steelers, who actually had the next pick, number 83 overall, which was the last pick in the round, that pick was forfeited because the team was found to have practiced with pads during an off-season period when pads were not allowed. So I don't know why I went down this rabbit hole finding all these nuggets out about the 1979 NFL draft. It was because I knew it was coming up on the 40th anniversary of the 49ers drafting Joe Montana, and I was blown away that it was actually had been 40 years since the 49ers took Montana out of Notre Dame. But that's not all. Other players drafted in 1979. Hall of Famers Dan Hampton, he went number 4 overall to Chicago, and Kellen Winslow went number 13 to San Diego. Phil Simms was the first quarterback drafted. He was taken 7th overall by the New York Giants. And Montana's Notre Dame teammate, Bob Golic, who made his biggest impact, I think, on Saved by the Bell the college years. He also made a few Pro Bowls in the NFL. He was drafted by New England in the second round. But wide receiver Dwight Clark was a 10th round draft pick out of Clemson, 249 overall back when the draft went, I think, like 12 rounds or something at one point. But Joe Montana and Dwight Clark drafted nearly 40 years ago. May 2nd to 4th was the 1979 NFL draft. So I'm going to forget about it, but if you have a good memory like that, you can remember when it becomes May 2nd or May 4th, or someone will probably remind you about it on Twitter. The 40th anniversary of the 49ers drafting Joe Montana, who, by the way, can't throw anymore. He's had multiple shoulder injuries and shoulder surgeries. And you know, he's not the only ex-NFL player to have, you know, medical problems and have multiple surgeries. But I have a friend who was a video director, and he worked with Montana recently on a shoot, said he was a super nice guy, but there was a moment where he had to throw. And so during the shoot, when he cocks his arm back, they had to cut because he couldn't actually throw because of all these shoulder problems he's had. And so they had to get creative showing him attempt to pass. And so if you think back to that NFL 100 commercial with all the NFL legends, and a lot of people got mad because Joe throws an interception. It turns out they actually used a double. So it shows Joe Montana making a pass that I think gets picked off by Deion Sanders. Actually not Joe Montana's pass because he didn't actually throw the ball in the commercial because he can't these days, which is a bummer. But Joe Montana, still the GOAT in my book. Let's move on. Let's start with a couple of emails here. We've got one from Marlon. He says, love the podcast. I started listening to the pod around this time last year to get my 49ers offseason news fix here in Philadelphia. Here in Philly, there are rumors of Eagles looking for a new running back, and I heard they are a little upset that we got Tevin Coleman and not them. There are also rumors that Lynch and the Eagles have talked about Matt Breida. How do you feel about the 49ers trading away Matt for a player or pick? I love Breida, but you said carrying four backs does seem a bit far-fetched. Thanks for the email, Marlon, and shout out to my listeners in Philly. I think it makes sense to carry four running backs until right before the beginning of the season. And then at that point, maybe you could make a trade if everybody's healthy. But if you can fit, I mean, the only reason it doesn't make sense to keep all these running backs, I mean, the attrition for running back position is crazy. So if you can carry that many, then carry them. The problem is the 49ers have it in the past, so you have to make concessions elsewhere. You can only dress 46, so it'd be weird to either sit Coleman or Jerick McKinnon or Matt Breida and not dress them, because that's probably what would happen a lot of times, is one of those guys wouldn't even dress on game days unless they're all playing special teams. I don't know. So they can definitely do it. You would have to carry one less guy at another position, but we've seen how often running backs get hurt. If you can carry all four of those guys, you might as well do it. Obviously, Raheem Mostert's the other one I haven't mentioned, but he's got too much special teams value, so he's always going to be active if he's healthy. I like Matt Breida too. Ideally, you could carry them all. And I think the one that you would trade is Jerick McKinnon, just because he costs more. But it depends. It depends what, if a team's willing to pay the price and you're healthy at the end of camp and another team's not healthy, I guess I could see something like that happening with one of these running backs, but definitely not until then. An email from Solman. He said, I wanted to get your thoughts on Emmanuel Hall as a potential third-round target for the 49ers. In general, thoughts on doing a show on some later sleeper-round prospects the 49ers might target, guys that you like. Yeah, as we get closer, I'm going to try to profile a few more later-round guys. I might have to do, you know, shorter profiles and just do quick hits on some guys so I can cover more, or else I won't really get to too many before draft day actually gets here, because we're coming up on it. We're within a month now. But to the first question, Emmanuel Hall. I like Emmanuel Hall a lot. He is fast, like flat out fast. Not just times well, looks pretty fast. He has easy speed. He blows by people like they're saying it still. It's crazy. So, and I like Emmanuel Hall a lot. And he, you know, he's got some rough edges. But I think the best comparison for him, remember when Mike Wallace came out of college and he was just getting bombs chucked at him all day from Ben Roethlisberger, that kind of a player? I think Emmanuel Hall is that style of guy where, and maybe, you know, third round pick or something like that. Yeah, I think that's right around the right spot. And if the 49ers don't go wide receiver in round one or two, Emmanuel Hall could very well be the best wide receiver left for him at the top of round three. And in fact, I think I did a mock draft that I posted on Twitter recently. By the way, you can follow me at BD Peacock. I did the Draft Network's draft mock draft machine, and I did a draft. I think I had Emmanuel Hall in one of those going in the third to the 49ers. And yeah, super deep threat. He can catch and run and do some slants and some other things. And I like him as a player. And I think there's a lot to develop there too. So this is such a crazy deep draft class. And that's why if you're the 49ers, maybe there's a different position at the top of the second round. You think, okay, I can wait because I can get a pretty similarly valued wide receiver at the top of round three, and I can't get this other position that late. Let's keep this mailbag rolling here. Should we hit Twitter now? No, let's see if we got another email in the box. An email from Derek. He said, hey, Brian, it's time to go on record here. So all the regular listeners have heard about your shadow draft. I've seen the spreadsheet on Twitter, and you have unquestionably outdrafted the 49ers front office. Well, thank you. Thank you, Derek. You're too kind. My question is, why do you think that is? Do you think these GMs' decision-making is affected by insider information, not necessarily taking medical character red flags, but just being overly conservative with what we'll call yellow flags? Or are you just better at this than the professionals? Well, Derek, I don't know about that. I do know that I think there is some analysis paralysis, you know, over-analysis that happens sometimes with players, and we're seeing that happening right now with the draft. Everybody for so long was like, oh yeah, obviously Nick Bosa is the best player. And then the more you go, the farther you go, the more you start poking holes in these prospects and you start seeing, you know, and so it's just, it gets crazy and gets out of whack. I think there is some cases where teams are just too close to it all. There's maybe too many voices. But with the red flags and stuff, I don't know. They have so much information. Like, who knows what, say, Reuben Foster's background check, what that looked like? What kind of information did they have on him that we don't have? Like, to us, it's like, oh, whatever. He had pot once. Who cares? Maybe there was all kinds of red flags. Maybe there's all kinds of warning signs. You'd be like, you can't draft this guy because it's not going to go well at all. And a lot of other teams passed on him. So what did they know? I don't know. It would seem like these teams would be so much better at it than someone like I could be, or someone. And there's a number of people that you could find on Twitter, guys that have never worked for teams. I mean, I'll put it this way. I could put together an entire front office and scouting staff of only dudes I know and females I know from Twitter and amateur scouts or people who write for publications that have never worked for a team. I could put together a team of scouts and front office people that could blow some teams away. So I think part of it is they're not exactly looking for the best people all the time. They're trying to find, first of all, it's a ton of nepotism in the NFL just in general. Find someone who works in the NFL, that you'll find someone who's had a dad that worked in the NFL, probably, you know, or an uncle, or, you know, had some ties to get in. And you see that a lot in the scouting world, just like you see it with the coaches. And sometimes they're meant to be. And sometimes, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, like with Kyle Shanahan. He was going to get an opportunity. He was going to be a good coach. Would he have gotten the opportunity that he got as soon as he did, as young as he did? Probably not, if his dad wasn't Mike Shanahan, right? So that happens. And sometimes they're still good. But you see this a lot in scouting too. And so I don't know. I think maybe they, in this day and age with the technology we have and all of the availability of film and stuff, I think they could probably rework how they do things as far as scouting departments and scouting staffs. And some of these guys are just so old school. Maybe it's passed them by a little bit. I don't know if you follow Greg Gabriel on Twitter, but he's a former, like, high up director of player personnel guy. He worked for the Bears. He worked for the New York Giants. He worked in the NFL for 30 years. You see him on Twitter, see him interact with people, see his takes, and it's like, oh my God. Like, I wish I could compete against 31 of those. You know, my team would be really good if I got to compete against 31 of those. Because the guy, he's like, what are you doing? You ran a football team? You ran a scouting department? Not to crush Greg Gabriel. Sorry, Greg. But it's just like, come on, dude. Yeah, I don't know, Derek. I don't know how a scouting department of one that has a separate full-time job should ever be able to come close to picking players as well as the real thing, as a GM with all of the money and all of the resources they have and all of the background information that they get. I don't know. And a better question is, how do these guys get jobs that aren't very good at doing this? And some of them continue to get jobs and jobs and more jobs. But the other part of it is it's humbling. Like, I've missed on a lot of dudes too. It's not easy. It's not an exact science. And when you look at history over the course of, you know, a big sample and many, many years, the good GMs and the bad GMs, there's not a huge difference. It's not like one team is just continually drafting, like killing people, drafting all these great players year after year, and another GM can't find any good players. You know, more often than not, it's a GM that doesn't do well for many years and then gets fired. More so than it's one, like even Bill Belichick, he misses all the time. And it's gotten to the point where he's like tired of drafting guys. He's like finding all these gems that he's seen play in the NFL already and finding them on the cheap instead of hitting on all these draft picks. You know, he's a good coach. He's got a good system in place and he got his quarterback and, you know, and finding value in other places. So yeah, it's crazy, man. I don't know. It's an inexact science and it's a humbling process. Even when you're good, you're going to miss a lot. But I will say, it's not that hard, especially early in the draft. There's too many misses early. I think there is some over-analysis going on. Let's check in on Twitter and G-Money's. Who are the top safeties in this draft that fit the 49ers? Top seven. That's a weird number. Top seven. Okay. Well, first of all, the fit makes it interesting because if you're looking for, and I assume you're talking more about free safeties in that single high, and that distinction makes it a little bit more difficult to find the guys that fit perfectly because sometimes they're athletic enough and you think they can do it, but in college you don't get to see the best safeties a lot of times play in that single high role. In this class, there's three guys that stand out who you at least get to see a lot of it, and they have the athleticism, and it looks like they have, you know, the ability to do that in the NFL, those three would be Juan Thornhill, who I profiled on yesterday's show. There's Deontay Thompson out of Alabama, and the small school guy out of Delaware, Nasir Adderley. So I think those three are the most obvious because it's easier to scout just because you get to see them do it. And obviously for the 49ers, they got to work with Juan Thornhill at the Senior Bowl, so that probably helped their evaluation because they could put him in exact situations they wanted to. Then you have a prospect like Darnell Savage, who I like a lot, and I love seeing him fly around. And he's actually kind of built and plays a little bit like Earl Thomas. I'm not calling him Earl Thomas as a prospect, but he has some of that because he's not the biggest guy, 5'11", 191 pounds, but he flies around and he comes downhill and he hits people. But again, he played a lot. You know, he did a lot of different things, and you see the speed. He ran 4.3s at the combine, and he flies. You can see it. He can flat go get people on the football field, but you just didn't see that much of him deep in coverage and playing the deep safety spots, more downhill stuff. Everything was, you know, in front of him. So that does make the evaluation a little bit more difficult because you're not just scouting him for any generic scheme and, you know, a too high safety where he can play some in the box or play some deep. You want him to be able to play that rangy deep safety and be that coverage guy in the last line of defense there in the middle of the field. And athletically, he can do it and he can come downhill and hit people, but you just have to, you know, you have to guess a little bit about that part of it. And I'm not done watching Darnell Savage's tape because it's fun to watch. I want to watch as much as I can to have that final evaluation because he might be one of those guys that's there at the top of the third round. And I think I like him there as a prospect if he does get out of round two. But I have to put him behind Juan Thornhill and behind Deontay Thompson and behind Nasir Adderley because of that, because I'm not sold on his style. Even though I think he could do it, it's not as easy to see as it is with those guys. And I would probably put Juan Thornhill ahead of Deontay Thompson. I think I still have Nasir Adderley number one. So let's rank these guys here if we're looking for our top seven safeties. We got Nasir Adderley one. Probably put Juan Thornhill two. Deontay Thompson three. Darnell Savage four. I would put Darnell Savage over Deontay Thompson, just for a standard safety, I think. Deontay Thompson's stock is falling, by the way. Like, earlier in the season, 6'2", 194 pounds, and he hasn't even worked out yet, waiting for Alabama's pro day. He hurt his wrist in workouts. But Deontay Thompson, talking about someone who people thought was going to be a top half of the first-round pick, I don't think he's that. In fact, I don't know if he's really even a first-round player. He has all of the ability and physical ability. Instinctively, sometimes he breaks down. Just, yeah, some questions there with Deontay Thompson, even though I like him and I think he'd be a good day two pick for the 49ers and would definitely fit in that single high role and had a chance to play a lot of that. But, you know, was better earlier in the season than it had some breakdowns later in the season for that Alabama defense. But I would put probably Deontay Thompson third, just ahead of Darnell Savage, just for the single high role. But I do think Darnell Savage could play it and it would be an interesting fit just because of how athletic he is. It'd be fun to watch him do that in a 49ers uniform. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is somebody that's gotten a lot of pub recently. I'm not as high on him as some people are. I think the Draft Network has him as their top rank safety right now, even ahead of Adderley. I think he's maybe still more of a safety, more of that slot corner, more of a corner, more of the slot corner, but could play safety. I know he had some problems as a tackler earlier in his career, but he was better last year. But I would put him probably five. So where are we at? We got five now. Adderley, Thornhill, Thompson, Savage, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Taylor Rapp is another one who I think, and see, this is where the fit comes in because there's Taylor Rapp, there's Jonathan Abram. Those would probably round out my top seven. After that, Malik Gantt, a strong safety I like, but he's more of a late day two, a day three type of a pro. Yeah, it's probably just a day three flat prospect, but more of a strong safety type. Amani Hooker. There's a lot of guys there I'm naming off here, but if I had to put them in order for the 49ers, the problem is like Rapp and Jonathan Abram, I think they're going to play more of a strong safety role, and Darnell Savage could play a strong safety too. So the single high distinction is what makes it difficult. But if I had to rank them for the 49ers, Adderley, Thornhill, Thompson, Savage, Gardner, Johnson, and then Abram and Rapp would be 6 and 7 in some order. Abram had a really, both of them actually had pretty good combines, but I like them both playing strong safety and not free safety. So changes things for the 49ers. Okay, this is a good spot. Let's take a quick break here, then get back to this Locked On 49ers mailbag. And remember, to get this show every day, subscribe on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya. With their personally curated playlists and new features every day, download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On 49ers. Let's hit some of these rapid fire. Let's go to Jason on Twitter. He says, with the cap space the 49ers have, I'd like to see them trade number 36 for Ramsey out of Jacksonville. Jason, I do believe that would not be close to enough to trade for Jalen Ramsey if even he was available. They're going to be asking for a lot more than a second-round pick, and I have my doubts on those rumors if Ramsey would actually even be available out of Jacksonville. To Taylor, hey, Brian, can we please discuss where Kentavious Street fits in our scheme and rotation? Everyone seems to forget we grabbed this guy, and with all the Ford and Bosa talks, I wonder where he was going to fit in. It's a good question, Taylor, because he's blocked. He's blocked by too many guys, which is why it's so mind-blowing that they drafted him in the fourth round, especially with the torn ACL. So very surprising. But aside from that, where does Kentavious Street play? Well, ideally, he's playing the same position that Eric Armstead plays, which is the same position that Solomon Thomas should be playing, which is the same position that fellow 2018 draft pick Julian Taylor should be playing. So even Ronald Blair, too, is a bigger type of a defensive end, even though he's a pretty decent pass rusher and he's got some quicks despite his odd like 206-2, 280-pound build or whatever he was coming out of Appalachian State. But yeah, there is a lot of guys that the 49ers have that are big defensive ends that would play maybe an interior pass rusher role on third down. So right now, Kentavious Street's blocked. So as the team is currently constructed, I don't really see much of a path to playing time for either Street or for Julian Taylor. So we'll see. I don't know. There might be some I got a feeling there's some trades in the works, whether it's Armstead or whether it's Solomon Thomas. Maybe Solomon Thomas is a summertime trade because I think it makes a lot more sense cap-wise if they trade Solly after June 1st. So yeah, it's a logjam with big defensive ends who can't rush from the edge. To Lumpy on Twitter, thoughts on Stanley Morgan? Seems like a Shanny-type wide receiver. You know, I think you're right about that. I think Stanley Morgan is a Shanny-type wide receiver out of Nebraska, and he is also somewhat underrated right now in the process, but it's such a deep draft. I think that's why the 49ers, even if they take a wide receiver at, say, number 36 overall, you grab one in the second round, grab another wide receiver on day three, fourth, fifth, sixth round, wherever, because this is too good of a class. It's too deep of a class. And so what if you have to cut somebody or you have too much depth, too much competition? Yeah, there's no such thing as that. So keep bringing in good players. And even if it's an undrafted free agent, there's going to be some really good players on day three that come out of this class. Maybe Stanley Morgan's one of them. Maybe he climbs up into the third round range. I'm not super crazy high on him, but I think he's a pretty good wide receiver just across the board. But he's not somebody that wows me. And right now I think the 49ers, if they do swing on a wide receiver early, they need to find a guy that could be that wow type of wide receiver. It's like, okay, this guy, I could see how if he develops, he could be that number one guy. He could be a monster. I think the 49ers should swing for that type of player. And then if someone later, like Stanley Morgan, still there on day three, then you double dip. That's the way I would look at it. So I like Stanley Morgan. I don't love him, but there's more to watch. There's more of him I want to see, and maybe I will fall in love with the Nebraska Cornhusker. Travis wants to know about another wide receiver, Mecole Hardman out of Georgia. You know, I haven't watched a ton of Mecole Hardman. From what I saw the first watch, he's definitely athletic. He's super fast. I'm going to go back and watch more. A lot of times I go through wide receivers and I watch a little bit of him. I want to see somebody that makes me want to watch more. And Mecole Hardman was good, but I wasn't like, okay, this is the guy that's going to change things for the 49ers. So I kind of went past it and went on to some other players. But I want to go on a deeper dive with some of these wide receivers that might be around a little bit later in the draft, like Mecole Hardman. Let's go to Team on Twitter. Could you share your personal opinion on the overall strength of this year's draft? Also include where this year's draft ranks as far as the last few years. Also, where is this year especially strong week positionally? Thanks again for the podcast. Always look forward to listening. Well, thank you for the question, team. Let's see. There was a lot of questions in there. Where is this draft strong and weak? So super strong and deep at wide receiver. That's the number one that jumps out to me. The more I watch the safeties, the more I really like this safety class, and I think there's a nice group. And both of those, it's actually really, this class is really matching up well with what the 49ers' needs are, because number one, edge, like crazy good edge and defensive line class. it's a crazy deep wide receiver class, but not necessarily as top heavy as it is an edge class. So that perfectly fits. If the 49ers go early at edge, now you're hitting the strength of the class where there's the depth in the second and third round range at wide receiver. And now I think it's a much better safety class than it is a cornerback class. So that's also good for the 49ers in that second round range. I think anywhere from 30 to 60 or 70 is an awesome range to be drafting a safety in this class. So to answer your question, so yeah, edge, wide receiver, safety. I think those are maybe the three strongest positions. When you consider where the class is weak, running back for sure. And I would normally not take running backs early, especially in this class. This is one of the worst running back classes in a while because usually draft classes are littered with just stud, sleeper, just good running backs because there's so many of them. For some reason this year, that's not the case, even though it was a really good running back class last year. I think this is going to be another one of those years where there are no running backs that go in the first round. And I wouldn't even be completely shocked. If it was me, I wouldn't take any of these guys in the second round. Cornerback, it's pretty weak class. There's none of those top 15 lock guys. A lot of people really like Greedy Williams. And I think he's probably got to be the best, the number one ranked man coverage corner in this class. That's okay. I would understand that, but I still wouldn't want to take him, you know, top 10, top 15, which is maybe where he's going to go. I like Byron Murphy a little bit more, but he doesn't wow you physically or as an athlete, and he's better zone type corner. So the cornerback class is really not very strong. So those are the two weaknesses, I think, number one, that jump out to me. It's a really good tight end class too, but the weaknesses are running back and corner for sure. To Garrett on Twitter, with the addition of Jordan Matthews, do you think Andy Isabella is in play at pick number 36, thinking he could play inside, outside, a la Brandon Cooks or Tyreek Hill in this system? That's interesting, Garrett. I still think no, partially because I'm not as high overall on Andy Isabella as some other people are. Obviously, he's super fast, and he's gotten pigeonholed into the short, you know, white guy wide receiver that has to play in the slot, but he can definitely play outside, so I agree with you there. I just am not super high on him, period. So I think he's going to go higher than my taste. And, you know, 36 overall, there's just going to be a wide receiver I like more than Andy Isabella right there. But he is fast, and the dude can blaze 4.3, 140, and you can see the speed on tape for sure. 5.9, 188, he better be fast. He's more of a downfield guy than a catch and run. He's sort of stereotype short wide receiver. You know, he breaks the stereotypes for sure with his body type, but just doesn't have a big catch radius. I like him. 36 too high. If he's there later and he becomes a crazy value, then yeah, for sure. All right, we're out of time here. Tried to rapid fire some of those. Thanks everybody for getting those mailbag questions in. If I did not get to yours, I apologize. Still going to hit some tomorrow with Nick, and we'll keep these going throughout the offseason and just about one every week here on the program. Thanks for listening, and remember, you can subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And when you're in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On 49ers.